Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. The man to my left is Lance Meadow. I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. Or if you're hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, we'll monitor that channel as well. Obviously, we are now full-fledged into the NFL offseason. Every NFL team does have a head coach. Except for one. They thought they did.
Yes, exactly.
But they don't. And now the Indianapolis Colts are searching for their head coach with Josh McDaniels assigned to stay in New England. We can discuss that a little bit. I know you and Paul kind of discussed that over the last couple of days. Obviously, a lot of fallout from that decision, which is one you don't see very often, quite frankly. But it is what it is. Now the Colts are looking for their next head coach. But Lance, I figured today a good place to start. We've done so much draft talk so far this year, which is understandable. It's the most important thing every NFL team will do each offseason. But we haven't talked a ton about free agency. So I figured this would be a good start. Greg Rosenthal, one of the nice editors and writers on NFL.com, compiled his top 25 list of free agents along with some honorable mentions that didn't make the list. So you probably got around 40 or so guys here. And we'll figure, go through the list quickly. We'll talk about the guys that we think are particularly interesting and see who might be of interest to the Giants and how we think this free agent crop generally ranks in the NFL.
Well, the quarterback position, a number of these guys are probably going to get the franchise tag or they're unlikely to move to begin with.
And there are other players at other positions that will fit that description.
Correct.
As well.
Absolutely. I mean, Kirk Cousins is by far the biggest name at that position, given the fact that the Redskins acquired Alex Smith.
Drew probably Brees, the second biggest, actually.
Well, but yeah, I just don't think Brees is going to hit the free agent market.
Of course
market.
He's
so
not.
That's why I don't even consider him.
Correct.
I know he's on the list, but Kirk is a legitimate free agent.
Which is exactly why we're going to skim past the guys that we have obvious opinions on. All right, here we go.
I think that's safe.
The number one guy on this list is Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think he's going to leave San Francisco, but I think it's curious whether or not they'll do a full franchise tag on him or figure out a way to do a long-term deal for him. I think that'll be interesting to see exactly how they handle that in San Francisco.
Well, what's also interesting is Kyle Shanahan worked with Kirk Cousins, and he also acquired Jimmy Garoppolo. So does he see who maybe is a better bargain between the two as he looks forward to the 2018 season? I think that's something to watch as well.
And obviously Cousins, a much bigger track record,
yeah.
a better track record and a longer one. Cousins, the second guy on this list, I think the teams that I would put as top suitors for him would be the Jets, the Browns, the Broncos, the Vikings, and the Bills. Those would be my top five. I take the Jaguars off that list because right now with that Blake Bortles injury and the fact that it would guarantee his fifth-year option to them, I think it would be difficult for them to afford both that and Kirk Cousins at the same time. So that would be my top five for Cousins. I don't think I'm forgetting anybody
off
that list.
Well, I did the Arizona Cardinals.
That's fair.
List.
I agree.
Yeah,
I will put the
Arizona
Cardinals there, too. I'm with
is
you.
Certainly a viable option for Kirk
someone.
Cousins, yeah, given the fact that Palmer retired and they may want to go in a younger direction. Plus, they've got a really good defense. I think he'd be a good fit there. Denver, which you named, I think makes a lot of sense. And Cleveland, the Jets, the reason they're on the list is because they also have the best financial resources right now to go out, sign
Correct.
Him, and not have to worry about anything else.
All right, Drew Brees, we talked about him. I think if the Saints had a very poor year this year, I think we might be having a different conversation, to be honest with you. But given how their defense has finally taken a step up, I would be shocked if he left. I think you're on the same page with that. You got Le'Veon Bell with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I would imagine at worst the Steelers would franchise tag him again. How would Bell respond to that, I think, is an interesting question.
Well, he said he was going to retire, which I think is highly unlikely. But
no, he will not. He will not pass up $16 million of guaranteed money to play a single year. That would be silly, but I would not surprise me if he held out for an extended period of time, or if the Steelers decided, you know what, maybe we trade him now, get value back for him, instead of deciding to let him go after we do franchise him for a second time. So I think Le'Veon Bell could be an interesting piece in terms of how the Steelers decide to handle that.
Well, and even if they do part ways with him and they do trade him, the good news for them is they'll have the draft after free agency finishes up, and they could always draft a future running back because we've seen how you can wait till the later rounds and get a guy that's going to fill in. Now, Le'Veon Bell is in a unique category. He's arguably one of the best running backs in the NFL, extremely versatile, but if the Steelers didn't think it was worthy of throwing all that money at the running back position, which I wouldn't blame them, I think there's ways to fill that void.
Right. DeMarcus Lawrence, number five on this list, a 25-year-old pass rusher that had 15 sacks last year.
Breakout year.
He ain't leaving. I would be surprised, to be honest with you, if him and Dallas came to a long-term deal only because I'm sure Dallas is hesitant to give him a long-term contract considering his past back injuries and the fact he's only had one really great breakout season. So they'll throw the franchise tag on him, and he'll either play in the franchise tag or they'll come to a long-term agreement.
Well, and suspensions as well, I would add to that too, John.
Good point.
It's not just the injury concern. It's the off-the-field behavior or the violation of the drug test. You want him on the field if you're going to invest that type of money in him.
And that was a performance-enhancing drug. Am I correct, or was it recreational?
You know, it may have been substance abuse. I'd have to double-check on that one.
I thought it might have been.
He may have been. It was one of the two.
Because David Irving was performance-enhancing. Maybe that's what I'm getting confused with. It was one of the other.
One of
you're
the
absolutely
two,
right.
I know that they
either way, it. It's still a red flag, whichever one it happened to
yeah.
be. Allen Robinson, the top wide receiver on this list. He's interesting because he tore his ACL last year. Before that, he was one of the up-and-coming wide receivers in football. It'll be interesting to see what the Jaguars decide to do with it. I'm sure the Jaguars want him back. They could franchise him, but coming off an ACL, that's a big-time investment. So I think Robinson is actually another interesting case as to how a team will handle a player coming off a serious injury.
The only thing that's interesting for the Jacksonville Jaguars is I like Robinson, but, John, if they look at what they got out of this young receiving core without Robinson, they
Keenan
may say Cole, to themselves,
Dede Westbrook.
Dede Westbrook, yeah, Marquise Lee.
Yep. He's also a free agent, by the way.
Correct. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to say to themselves, yeah, Robinson may get a lot of money on the open market. We'll just go with the younger guys.
And what is the open market for a guy coming off ACL surgery?
Correct. That's another major
question.
It depends, obviously, who else is going to be still on the market at the time.
Now, he injured that way early in the year. I don't remember if it was week one or preseason. I think it was week one of the NFL regular season, if I recall properly, which means – he'll have a full 12-month recovery period to start next year's regular season, which is usually 12 months is enough time to get back and be pretty close to 100%. But that's interesting. Teddy Bridgewater, we've talked about, a quarterback that did flash a little bit before he hurt himself, coming off, obviously, a very, very serious knee injury. Sheldon Richardson is interesting. The Seahawks traded a second-round pick for him to get him from the Jets,
yes.
I believe. He's a free agent now, a very good defensive tackle, but there are some off-the-field things with him, too, that some teams might have some red flags about.
Well, and Seattle, with all its injuries, I mean, you wonder whether or not they're going to be willing to invest a little bit more money in him because, you know, between their secondary and their front seven, they've lost a number of players over the last few years, too.
And the question is, at what stage does the Seahawks front office think their team is in? Are they still in win-now territory, or is this when they begin to maybe try to rebuild that defense with some younger pieces? And now Sheldon Richards is not old by any means.
No, he's a young piece, yeah.
He's 26, I guess,
yeah,
something
I mean,
like
he's
that.
He's still young enough that you'd want to invest in him.
But the other guys aren't. You know, Cam Chancellor's 30. Earl Thomas, 30. I'm not sure how old Wagner is, but Michael Bennett, 30. Chris Avril might have to retire because of that injury
neck
he suffered
injury,
last
yeah.
year. So those are things you take into consideration. Ezekiel Ansah, the second-best pass rusher, and I think he will be highly sought after, a player that was raw coming out of college, so I still think there's probably some upside there for him to continue to improve. He had some injuries the last couple of years that maybe held him back a bit. I think Ansah will be highly sought after as a pass rusher, defensive end, or even a stand-up rusher in a 3-4.
Well, and now you have Matt Patricia coming in as the new head coach, and based on what he's done in New England and some of the guys that have passed through there, I'm sure he says to himself, this is one guy that I could build my defense around. So maybe his value even increases for the sake of Detroit now that you have a defensive-minded head coach.
And Detroit has struggled defensively, so
yeah.
To lose their best player would obviously be hurtful, and they could always franchise Ansah too. That's an option, but that might be a little steep, but we'll see. It's always a possibility. Next two guys on the list, a couple of wide receivers, Jarvis Landry and Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins obviously had those foot injuries early in his career. He really, even on a tremendous Rams offense, was not overly productive last year, which is disappointing. Then you have Jarvis Landry, who was interesting. Obviously, if you look at his raw numbers, you think, yeah, number one wide receiver, 90 catches every year, 1,000 yards, but he's a slot guy. So how much do teams value that when they take a look at Jarvis Landry as a free agent, a guy that I think might be, maybe besides Kirk Cousins, the biggest money player that might have the best chance of switching teams this offseason?
Well, supposedly, based on reports, you know, the Dolphins and his people have already sort of exchanged proposals over the last few months. So they've been talking, which I think is a positive. I mean, he does play the slot. I don't want to say he's a possession receiver, but if you look at how the Dolphins utilize him, they're not necessarily throwing him down the field, John, for 30 to 40 yards and throwing bombs down the field. He's more of a guy that moves the chains, and he can average 8 to 10 receptions a game. So that is something that they're going to have to take into consideration, the health of Ryan Tannehill and whether or not those two could pick up where they left off.
And do they think they can survive with the combination of Kenny Stills and Devontae Parker? I mean, they have two
young guys as well.
They do have other wide receivers on the roster, but obviously Landry has been, I mean, let's be honest, he's been a model of consistency.
Absolutely.
Over the course of his young career.
Yeah, and remember, they got also to look at the running game. Jay Ajayi they traded, you know, the offensive line. They have other priorities this offseason. Wide receiver I don't think is the number one thing on the list, but, you know, now that Adam Gase is trying to settle in with this offense and you hope to get Ryan Tannehill back healthy, he's going to need guys to help move the chain. So there's value for Landry. I'm wondering whether or not Landry's best value is actually in Miami because of how they utilize him. That's something that he needs to ask himself. Because remember, when you change teams and they want to move you around, John, you may not be nearly as effective in getting the same amount of targets elsewhere.
A lot of times when a team really knows a player, that allows them to get the most out of him, which is obviously beneficial to Landry. Who doesn't like playing in Miami, by the way? I think that's always a draw.
That's appealing.
Nobody likes Miami like NFL football players. Let's leave it at that. Next two players on the list at 12 and 13, a couple of Rams defensive backs. I'll go Tremaine Johnson first. He's at 13. He's the guy they basically decided to keep instead of Janoris Jenkins a couple years ago. He's been franchised two consecutive seasons. He's a free agent now. He's a good cover corner. I'm not sure he'd be great. So that's a guy that I bet would move on, and the Rams wouldn't be willing to make that type of long-term commitment to him. I think LaMarcus Joyner is interesting. He's a player that I drafted a few years ago. He's one of those kind of crossover players that can do a little bit of everything in the secondary. In fact, in my opinion, he seems to be the type of guy that maybe James Betcher might find.
He can
cover, he can play safety, he can tackle, he can do a little of everything.
Slot,
So I think he's an interesting guy to keep an eye on that could be really effective if he's signed by a team that has a defensive coordinator that really knows how to use that type of player.
Well, Wade Phillips, I would say, knew how to use him this past season, so he's going to have to weigh that too. But he's that versatile type of player. He started off as a slot guy. He wasn't happy with his playing time. If you go back to his days on Hard Knocks with the Rams and Jeff Fisher, and then they slowly expanded his role, and this year was essentially a breakout year for him because Wade Phillips put him at the safety position. So he's probably going to get a lot of demand on the free agent market because guys like that who could play multiple positions, they don't just grow on trees all the time.
And the Rams might want to keep him too. So we'll have to see what happens.
I think they're certainly going to want to invest in him.
Absolutely. Case Keenum next on the list at 14. I know I wouldn't pay him a ton of franchise quarterback money. I know you think a team might, and I think a team might too. I think it would be a mistake. Obviously, that's not really Giants related, so we'll move on. And this is where it gets interesting, Lance, because three out of the next six guys on this list are offensive linemen. So this is where I think Giant fans might want to perk their ears up a little bit. Andrew Norwell at 15, undrafted in 2014 by the Panthers. Cemented himself as an all-pro first team this year. Again, offensive line is becoming a premium position in the league, Lance. He's a young player, only 25 or 26. I don't have his age in front of me. So he is going to make a lot of money this offseason. And I'll go to the other two offensive linemen in this grouping just because it's kind of all in the same category. At 19, only four slots down from Norwell is Justin Pugh. Giant fans know about him.
I'd say so.
And then right after that, the real left tackle on the free agent market, Nate Solder, who's been protecting Tom Brady's blind side. He's turning 30, so an older player, but he knows what he's doing out there. So these are three guys that I think we're going to be hearing about a lot this offseason when it comes to the New York Football Giants and a lot of other NFL teams that need offensive linemen in the worst way.
Well, it's exactly what happened last offseason. All of those offensive linemen that we were speculating about, what happened? The market drove them up because the demand was extremely high. So I don't think this offseason is going to be any different. Solder, by the way, started off as a right tackle, so he could play both sides, even though he is up there in age. And Norwell, you know, this is a player that Dave Gettleman helped find. Even though he was undrafted, Gettleman was the general manager at the time. So if there's any of these three on the list that the current Giants general manager knows very well, Norwell is at the top of the list. But I'm sure even if Gettleman has interest, he's not going to be the only GM that is going to target a young guard who is extremely promising. I mean, when a player goes from undrafted to all pro, he's doing something right in terms of his development, and his agent is going to make sure that the executives across the league know about that, because he's somebody that is now looking to get paid, and he's looking to get paid now as opposed to waiting another 3 to 4 years, which he had to do when he was an undrafted player.
And he's your type of tough, powerful, road grading, you know, push the pile type of guard that a lot of teams are looking for to help that running game. And obviously Justin Pugh is versatility. He can play every position on the line. Obviously he's had some injury issues, but a player like that is going to be very valuable on the free agent market as well. Malcolm Butler, someone that's been in the conversation a lot the last few days. I'm not sure how much teams will worry about whatever his Super Bowl week faux pas might have been that found him on the bench, but I'm sure he'll be looked after as one of the top cornerbacks on the market. And he's still young, by the way, too. He's really entering his prime, so he has some good years left. Dontari Poe, who had to settle for a one-year deal last year, he was considered one of the best nose tackles on the market. He signed a one-year contract. Now I'm sure he's going to be looking for that big-money deal. And then the other person in this little grouping is Deion Lewis, who the Patriots have really gotten a lot out of, and you wonder how much another team will be willing to invest in somebody that's really broken a lot of tackles over the last couple of years.
Well, and he's a good receiver, too.
Oh, yeah.
But New England has the tendency, John, to utilize a running back, move on, bring the next running back in. So
correct.
It would not surprise me if Lewis gets some money, New England's going to say, listen, we appreciate what you did, but we can find somebody else.
Your thoughts on Butler? You think there's going to be a huge market for him?
I think there's going to be teams that are certainly going to be interested in him. You know, every season we always talk about a guy that has off-the-field issues or steals the headlines. Oh, nobody's going to touch him. They're worried. And then all of a sudden, when you're a general manager and you realize you need an upgrade at the cornerback position and you're not sold on the draft class, you wind up signing a guy who maybe has a troubled past. And, you know, Butler's played really good football when his head has been on straight and he has been on the football field with the Patriots. So I think he's going to get a great deal of interest for teams that are not sold on some of these younger corners. It's just a matter of, you know, can he quiet this speculation in the early stages of free agency that people are not going to be digging too much behind that, because he's already tried to squash it. He put up an Instagram post and he has said that it was all lies and rumors. I'm sure there is some validity behind it.
Well, he listed some.
I don't think that's a stretch.
Well, he listed some specific things he didn't do. Notice,
correct. Yes,
being late for a team meeting wasn't in that list, that have listed the things that he didn't do.
Well, because it was convenient, let's face it, he was accused of about 35 different things.
And he listed about 30 things on his list.
So when you are accused of 35 different things, you focus on all of that, and people don't remember about the 4 or 5 other things. So I think did that out of convenience.
Oh, absolutely.
But I do think there's going to be interest for him.
All right, here's some other guys. Sam Bradford, again, knee injuries, we'll throw him aside for a second. Star Lotulelei, big run stuffer, kind of Dontari Poe. Again, someone that was with Dave Gettleman in Carolina. But again, the Giants have two guys that fit that profile already in Snacks Harrison and Dalvin Tomlinson. So I don't think that would necessarily be a fit. Bashaud Breeland, someone who's been the number two cornerback with the Redskins the last couple of years with Josh Norman. We've seen him give up some really big plays, but also be a very physical bump-and-run type of guy. So I think he'll get some interest. I don't think he's going to get top-tier money. Morgan Burnett, a reliable veteran for the Packers that has had a lot of injuries the last few years, so I think that might scare teams away. And then Carlos Hyde, who I think is interesting, Lance, who has a ton of talent, but couldn't really put things together this year with Kyle Shanahan like a lot of people thought he would. And he's still young. He's had some injury issues. Is he somebody that is going to garner big value on the market, or is someone going to be able to get a good valued prime-aged running back in Carlos Hyde?
Well, the Niners, they utilize the fullback probably more so than any other team I've seen in terms of, I'm not talking about blocking, I'm talking about running the fullback when you look at what Kyle Juszczyk did this past season. So when you take that into consideration, they may say, hey, we bring in another young running back who they already have on the roster, we utilize the fullback, it's not worth us investing a great deal of money in Carlos Hyde. But Hyde's going to get opportunities. Keep in mind, though, these running backs haven't necessarily cashed in who think they're going to cash in previous offseasons.
Even Mark Ingram was a good example of that when he became a free agent.
So, you know, I mean, they may think of themselves as productive, and I think Hyde is productive, but you don't see teams throwing a lot of money at the running back position. Look at even Latavius Murray. Well, we didn't get a whole lot from the Vikings.
Yeah, and to me, Lance, Carlos Hyde's a guy you bring in to be a part of a two-man team. He's not a guy you're going to bring in and say, all right, you're getting 25 carries. There aren't many guys like that in the league anymore.
I don't think there's more teams like that anymore.
No, exactly. Yeah. So how much money can you invest in a single player when they're going to be splitting time at that position anyway? The other guys, these are the honorable mentions in alphabetical order. Nigel Bradham, a linebacker for the Eagles, after their performance in the Super Bowl. I'm not sure how excited people will be about that. Vontae Davis, veteran corner. Tyler Eifert and Jimmy Graham, two veteran tight ends that obviously have some injury red flags related to them. Brent Grimes, still a very good corner,
very
but somebody
effective.
That's in his almost mid-30s now. But, boy, he can still play the
For
game.
For a one- or a two-year deal, John, I'd be more than happy to pay him.
I'm with you. If you get him on a one-
still
or two-year deal,
productive.
I'm with you. I agree. Jordan Matthews, who had a down year after going from the Eagles to the Bills. Jerick McKinnon, who obviously had a small role in the Vikings team this year, splitting time with the other running backs. Julius Peppers, who I imagine if he plays again will probably try to stay in Carolina. He was happy to go home where he started. Terrell Pryor, who took a one-year prove-it deal with the Redskins last year, did not prove anything.
And now it's
going to be difficult for him, I think, to get a long-term deal. Eric Reed, a very good safety for the Niners, who's young, but obviously has some of that anthem stuff around him. With Colin Kaepernick, Weston Richburg, the Giants center, is on this list, who obviously missed most of the year with a concussion. Kenny Vaccaro, a playmaking safety, who either almost lost his job or lost his starting job.
He did lose his job.
That's right.
Started off strong, fell off, a little bit up and down.
And then Mike Wallace, a big, tall, deep threat at wide receiver. So those are kind of your top 35 or so free agents that are out there, folks. I thought it would be interesting to kind of go through them. And just give you a taste of what's going to be coming when free agency starts in that first week of March. Now, your calls. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Travis in Queens. He will lead us off. Good morning, Travis. How are you?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
Good, Travis. What's up?
Good, good, good. Yeah, you guys do not care for running back whatsoever like that. You guys, I don't get it.
What do you mean?
Look, what do you mean?
You guys' theory on running back is, there's a bunch of them that do the same thing out there. And that's not necessarily the case. You take the Giants, for instance. We haven't scored. The last steal we got in running back was probably Ahmad Bradshaw. Dawkins, he's been decent. Goldman, he looks okay. But you guys make it seem like it's easy to get a late round pick.
No, not late round. I never said late round, Travis. But if you want to use their second or a third round pick on a running back, you can find a very good running back. And if you go back the last few drafts, I can give you a litany of very good running backs that were picked in the second and third round of these drafts. I'm not talking fourth and fifth now. I'm talking second and third.
Oh, okay.
There's a difference.
Second and third.
Kareem Hunt was a third-round pick.
DeMarco Murray.
Oh, okay. Because I thought when you guys was mentioning, you meant, like, late round. Like, you could find one in the fourth.
Yeah, but you can find the guy in the fourth round. I don't think that's a stretch. I mean, I've seen guys in the fifth round.
No, it's not a stretch, but it's
easy,
to find a productive.
Of it depends on the offensive line, what type of shape your offense is in. I mean, you can find guys that'll be successful. You need the pieces around you. It's like if I take a guy in the first round and I don't have an offensive line and a good quarterback, that guy is probably going to struggle too.
Yeah, Travis, I think my larger point is this. Look, and I've always been very consistent with this. If you want a premium player, you have to use premium resources to acquire that premium player, whether it's big money in free agency, whether it's a top draft pick. If you wait until if you're waiting until day three to draft a player, there's a good chance that player is not going to work out. Can you find good players in the fourth and fifth and sixth round? Sure. But the chances of it are much smaller as compared to rounds one, two, and three. In my opinion, though, generally speaking, the running backs you'll get in round two a lot of times are not much different than the running backs you'll get in round one, depending on the year. Now, there are exceptions to that rule. Adrian Peterson, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley might very well be an exception to that rule. All that's true.
Right.
But if you look at the top running backs in the league, look at the rounds they were drafted in. They were not drafted in the first round. Where was Le'Veon Bell drafted? Where was Alvin Kamara drafted? Where was Carlos Hyde drafted? Where was Lamar, the Chiefs running back this year
Kareem
drafted?
Hunt.
Kareem Hunt, thank you.
Third round.
I was going to say Lamar. I knew that wasn't right.
I think Carlos Hyde was a first round. Second round pick. I think he was like potential, like skill wise. I just think Ohio State didn't get enough press at that time due to the suspension. But anyway though, that's not my point. I wanted to make my main point was, and you guys was alluding to, was the free agency market. Is there any big name for linebacker?
No.
Well, there weren't any of the names that we just went through. I mean, Nigel Bradham is one guy that comes to mind, but he was on the Eagles, and he's not necessarily a guy that made the top list. He's more of a, what was he, an honorable mention player, right?
Yes, correct.
That was on our list.
I mean, there really aren't that many great linebackers anymore, especially that the way where you'll find, Travis, those great linebackers as those 3-4 outside pass rush stand-up guys like a Von Miller, but there just aren't that many. You know, Deion Buchanan's, Luke Kuechly, Sean Lee's, they just really aren't developed the way they used to be, you know?
And my point going, my second point is I think going in, like, to the draft after the free agency is that we're going to have to, like, the first round and second round, that's why I'm starting to weigh towards Paulie Dott theory of trading down. You guys had a good show yesterday too, but about trading down, because it seemed like this draft for the Giants is really going to be O-line and linebackers.
Well, it depends on where they want to target those positions, and I mean whether you move down or not, you know, you could still grab an offensive lineman with your second round pick, even if the Giants stay where they are. I don't think that's something that, you know, would then be reaching under those circumstances, and the same thing with a linebacker.
But we don't know like the potential of these linebackers. Like are they highly graded in this year's draft, or is it too early right now?
I think it's too early at this point.
It's a little early. But look, there are a couple guys though that should be top 15 picks. Tremaine Edmonds is one, and Roquan Smith is the other. Those are the two guys that are expected to go in the top 15.
So, all right, so do you guys call a third-round pick a steal, or does it depend on the position? Like, would you call a third-round pick a steal, or?
Well, it depends on the production you get out of that third-round pick.
Of course. It depends on the player.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call, guys.
You got it.
I appreciate it. I mean, if you pick a guy in the third round, he turns into a six-time All-Pro, that's a steal.
Of course. I mean, it's more production. It's not where you take the guy. You can take a guy in the third round. He could just be an average, you know, contributor, special teams, and you're like, okay. But if he turns out to be a legitimate starter and is a continuous contributor, then, you know, I think that that's somebody. That's a steal. I actually, a few weeks ago, I looked through the top 10 rushing teams in the National Football League and where their starters were taken, how they were acquired, to make the point, because everybody keeps going back to the fact that you need to use a first-round pick on a starting running back. And if you look at the teams this season, John, other than Jacksonville and Dallas, which were 1-2 and have Fournette and Zeke, everybody else on this list pretty much has a late first-round starter or a guy they traded for or somebody they took in the later rounds. Ajayi was a fifth-round pick. He was acquired via trade. If you go to Carolina, Stuart McCaffrey share the load, but they were both mid to late first-round picks. McCaffrey was an eighth overall pick, but Stewart was a later-round first-round pick. Ingram was late-round pick for the Saints. Kamara was a third-rounder. McCoy was a second-round pick who then traded to Buffalo. Latavius Murray was a sixth-round pick who turned out to be a free agent. Gurley was a high first-rounder. Kareem Hunt was a third-rounder. And then Deion Lewis was a fifth-rounder who was signed in free agency.
And then I want to throw in the individual leaders here, Lance. The third-highest rusher in the league this year was Le'Veon Bell, not a first-round pick. Sixth leading rusher in the NFL. I'm only listing guys that weren't on your list.
Yeah.
Sixth leading rusher in the NFL, Jordan Howard, fourth round pick. Melvin Gordon, he was seventh. He happened to be a first round pick. CJ Anderson, ninth in the league in rushing, not a first round pick. Alex Collins, 11th, no. Lamar Miller, 16th, no. Devontae Freeman, 17th, no. Tevin Coleman, no. Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray from the Titans, no. So, and I do think there is a differentiation too, which I think you made, which was smart, between a player picked in the top 10 and a player picked 25th or 26th. There's a big difference in the value, and just look at the trade chart when you look at those picks, between those types of players.
Yeah, if you could get a late first rounder and he could be a starting running back, there's nothing wrong with that. Nobody says you got to go out and use a top five pick on a running back. And I understand the attractiveness of Leonard Fournette and Ezekiel Elliott. But let's also not dismiss the fact that Elliott and Fournette walked into situations where the offensive line was in order. You had, obviously, a young, promising quarterback who had a great rookie year in Dak Prescott. Blake Bortles has had a very good season. You had a combination of a lot of factors that helped the running back thrive. That's my bigger point here.
Yeah, and I think those guys are also uniquely physical where they could handle a really big rush load. Barkley is more of a versatile type of back where he's not going to probably rush it 25 times a game. At least they didn't ask him to do that at Penn State. But he's a guy that'll help you in the return game. He'll be a good receiver out of the backfield. Yeah. And he'll do a million different things. Look, he's going to be a great pro. A great pro. But the second thing, Lance, is not just you can find one later. It's shelf life. What's the shelf life of these guys? Like, how long is Ezekiel Elliott going to be a top player? How long is Leonard Fournette going to be a top player? How long is Todd Gurley going to be a top player? You know, it could be for 8 or 9 years, but maybe it's just going to be 5 or 6. And then they're going to take a big fall off a cliff. Running backs take a lot of punishment.
More so than any other position, yeah.
It's something that you have to take into consideration when you're debating whether or not to use your pick on a player at that particular position. But remember this too, folks. Lance mentioned McCaffrey, 8th overall pick last year. Dave Gettleman picked him. So he's not adverse to picking a running back early if he thinks it's the right player and the right talented player. So that's why, to me, Barkley is in the mix at number 2. Despite what my personal opinion might be, and it's understandable that he is. He's a very, very talented player.
Yeah, because he's versatile like McCaffrey, to your point. The only thing that I continue to throw out is, depending on how free agency plays, or even if free agency doesn't go in favor of the Browns at the quarterback position, Cleveland may still very well take Barkley at 1, and he may not even be available at number 2.
You love that scenario.
No, well, it's not that I love the scenario. I think it's extremely realistic.
I don't know if it's likely, though.
Barkley. Well, if they go out and they sign Kirk Cousins, John Dorsey gets a deal done.
That's fair.
They're not taking a quarterback.
No, that's fair.
Or Cleveland could say this. Cleveland could say Rosen, Darnold, Mayfield, Jackson. You know what? We like the majority of them. But we know that if we wait till 4, Barkley's not going to be there. So why not get Barkley out of the way and then take our quarterback at 4? They could think that way as well. I don't think either of those options is a stretch.
Amari in Atlanta. He's up next. Hi, Amari. How are you, buddy? What's going on? Thank you for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hey, fellas. It's been a minute. Wanted to talk about just recent things with the Giants. Love the Betcher hire. I've been a fan of the Arizona defense the last few years, so it's great. I feel like we've got pieces he could work with. Had a question about Ross Cockrell.
Sure.
Is he a restricted free agent this year?
That's a good question. Let me double check. Again, none of this is official. This is only off what SpotRack has on their website.
Sure. He is a free agent.
Yes. Is he restricted or unrestricted?
I don't know if they list him.
I knew he was a free agent. I wasn't sure exactly what his designation was. Based on what I'm looking at here, he is an unrestricted free agent.
Okay, so he was our fourth cornerback this year, but I doubt we'd be able to keep him for fourth cornerback money. Do y'all have any idea, like, what type of contract, like, a player like him could get?
It's a good question.
Would we be able to retain him?
I think it's possible. I think that's a guy the Giants could certainly retain if they wanted to. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to get, you know, a 8-figure-per-year type of contract. I mean, if you can get him for a reasonable rate, and I think that's certainly in the cards. I think if the Giants, this way, Amari, if the Giants want Ross Cockrell back, he's probably going to be back. It's not going to be a day where he's priced out of their market.
Okay, cool. Regarding the draft, obviously everyone's high on Barkley. I'd love it if we got Barkley, but I'm kind of leaning more towards the scenario Lance was just talking about. Like, I'd love it if the Browns just took him first overall. That way we don't have to worry about him. Because, like, even though he's, like, this amazing talent, just the money you'd have to pay him. Like, I think y'all said last week that he'd become, like, the top 5 most paid player running back if we took him at 2.
Well, remember, it's on a rookie contract scale, though, keep in mind. I mean, when you draft a guy like that, you don't have to worry about paying him free agent money until his rookie contract plays out.
So he wouldn't be, like, guaranteed, like, $10 million a year just because
well,
he took
I
him
mean,
in two?
I don't know the scale off the top of my head, so I'm not exactly sure what a number two pick is going to be penciled in or what type of a ballpark, but he's under a rookie contract. It's not as if you're going to pay the number two pick nothing, but you have parameters that you have to deal with when you work out a contract. So it's not as if it's Barkley and his reps come to the Giants and it's free reign, hey, give us, you know, $40 million. So you have some restrictions that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be overly concerned about that.
And there isn't a big difference between what you would pay a player at two or what you would pay him at five. There isn't a huge difference there.
Okay. Well, I'd still like to trade the pick and sort of just accumulate some picks. There are a lot of good linemen. I was watching some of the Shrine Bowl practices with the O-lineman drills. And, John, you were there, right?
I wasn't at the Shrine game. I was at the Senior Bowl.
The Senior Bowl. Yeah, sorry. Like, obviously, big name, Quentin Nelson. I feel like it'd be a mistake if we didn't come out of this draft with one of either Quentin Nelson, the Hernandez kid out of UTEP, or Wynn out of Georgia. Those were three names that have kept coming up that I watched film on and really like. It's like when they get their hands on people, like, you know, they move people. And I guess my last thing I'll take off the air.
Yep.
Obviously, with the new Betcher situation, the emphasis is put on the back seven. We've got a big hole in the middle of the field at linebacker. I'd love it if we got a guy like Roquan Smith, but what other linebackers? I know you mentioned Tremaine Edmonds or Edwards. What other linebackers are like? Would you recommend we like watch film on or watch some highlights?
You know, that's a good question. I appreciate the call. I've not done a lot of linebacker work yet, aside from those top guys who obviously know a lot about. I will try to get a couple more names for you before the end of the show. I'll do some work here as we go along. But those are the top guys. Kiper has his top 10 prospects by position out. I'll give you the other linebackers on that list just so you have some names to work off of.
Sure.
Let's see. What do we got here? Inside, he is Roquan Smith, Rashawn Evans from Alabama, Josie Jewell, who's not a toolsy guy, but he's a good linebacker from Iowa, Micah Kaiser from Virginia. He's more of a run-stopper type. And those are the guys that are probably your day one or day two options. And then the guys that play outside linebacker, they're mostly, besides Tremaine Edmonds, they're mostly the pass rusher type. So, you're not going to have a ton of options, I don't think, if you're looking for your traditional inside linebacker in rounds two and three that are going to be able to run around and kind of have sideline-to-sideline speed.
Sure. All right, well, thanks for the call, guys. Y'all really keep me sane through the offseason, especially with all this Eagles drama going on. But,
thank you, Mari.
Really appreciate it, guys. Take care.
All right, Mari. Yeah, if you guys don't want to watch that Eagles parade on NFL Network, please, we're here for you. All right?
The other thing I was going to say with respect to Betcher's defense, remember, they played the 3-4 defense in Arizona about 25% of the time and then went to nickel a lot. So, you know, you can't think about, oh, well, four linebackers are going to be on the field for, you know, 99% of the plays. It's the same thing when we talk about the Giants' defense this past season, that how often were three linebackers on the field?
True, but here's the trick with that. In your 3-4 defense and your base, like you mentioned, you have the four linebackers, right? When you go to the nickel, usually what happens is those two outside linebackers just put their hands in the dirt and they'll rush the passer as a nickel. So you're still stuck with those two inside linebackers that are going to be on the field 75% of the time. who do the Giants have that can do that besides B.J. Goodson?
But
I think that inside linebacker spot is really the spot where they need to get a little bit more depth and get some more options.
And that's understandable. I think, though, they could utilize three safeties more often than not.
Yes,
and that could give them an option for a safety to play a slash linebacker role, too.
Well, and this is what Paul and I talked about last week or on Tuesday when we had Bruce Arians on, and it was the importance of those hybrid type of players, the Deion Buchanans, the Buda Bakers, guys like that that can come up and down and play both those spots and be flexible with them. So I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, and that's why I'm bringing that up. It's not to downgrade the importance of linebacker. It's just that I think a lot of people look at 3-4 and they're like, oh, four linebackers, we've played a 4-3 defense, got to get an extra linebacker, that linebacker's going to be on the field all this time. I just don't think it's that simple.
It's not that simple, but Arians did point out basically Paul asked him a good question. He goes, based on, you know, your film work on the Giants defense last year, which he did because the Cardinals played the Giants.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, what do you think the Giants need to implement what Betcher likes to do? And he basically said, fast linebackers in the middle of the field.
And that's understandable.
So, but again, that will also include those type of hybrid players you're talking about that can come down a nickel and play both spots. I mean, if you look at the, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the anatomy play I did on Betcher's defense. And he had a play where he had, I think, if you included Tyrann Mathieu, who was in the slot, as a safety on that play, and you count Deion Buchanan as a safety, they had five safeties on the field on one play.
Well, and,
five safeties.
That's my point, yeah.
Exactly, and that's going towards your point where he has guys that can do multiple things, and that allows him to disguise his schemes, which allows the Cardinals to be effective.
So I guess just to pile on to that, and I know we want to get back to the phone calls, perhaps Dave Gettleman's philosophy this offseason, John, is to maybe go after a few additional safeties who they view as transitional linebackers as opposed to just looking at guys who can only play the linebacker position. That's something at least to monitor, and they'll also evaluate who's currently on the roster at the safety position, whether or not some of these young guys are a good enough fit for James Betcher's game.
Oh, one other linebacker I like, by the way, and D. Gordon Libby at Adam G-O-B-J on Twitter.
That's a mouthful.
Pointed it out to me, yes. There are some mid to late round prospects, and I forgot the kid's name. I think it might be Fred Warner, actually, who he mentions here. He's the linebacker out of BYU, who I know a lot of people really liked over the course of Senior Bowl. And Darius Leonard is another. He's more of a late-round guy. But I don't think you can expect those guys to come in and play right away.
That's the thing.
Right.
I mean, any linebackers that we're going to be talking about right now.
The kid out of BYU, maybe, though.
Talking about outside of the first round, to expect them to all of a sudden come in day one and shine may be asking a lot, especially based on the fact that they may be looking for a versatile player who could go on the back end as well as the front end. I mean, if you look at Arizona's makeup, just in terms of the guys that played the linebacker position, John, they had Chandler Jones, you know, who obviously was at the New England Patriots. You brought up Buchanan. You know, Carlos Dansby was a seasoned veteran who's been with Arizona, it seems like, every other year. And he leaves and then he comes back.
Yeah, he does.
And then Hassan Reddick, who they drafted. But Reddick is that versatile guy you could move around. So that's what I'm saying. Maybe that's the approach in the draft.
Yeah.
We're going to look at players who we know can move around based on how they were utilized in college.
And Fred Warner is the BYU linebacker, so good job by our Twitter follower there as well. Just in terms of the trade, too, and we'll get back to your calls in a second here. This is the argument for trading down. Here are two situations. You figure if the Giants, let's say the Giants trade down to 7 or 8 or 6 or 7, somewhere in that area, okay? If they don't, they would pick, in fans' theoretical world, Saquon Barkley with the second overall pick, right? And then they pick, let's say, a Will Hernandez with their second-round pick. You got the offensive lineman, you get the running back. If the Giants trade down to 6 or 7, the assumption would be you would be getting the team you're trading with their second-round pick this year, right? And I think in most trades, you would get that. So in that case, you would be able to draft Quentin Nelson with your first-round pick. With your second-round pick, you can still draft Will Hernandez. Then, with your additional second-round pick, you can get a Darius Geis. You can get a Ronald Jones. You can get whatever running back you really like coming out in the draft. So would you rather have Barkley and Hernandez or Nelson Hernandez and either a Geis or a Ronald Jones or one of those next-tier running backs? What's better for you as a fan? What do you prefer? The two stud offensive linemen plus the running back or the stud running back and one offensive lineman? I would rather get the numbers. That's just me.
Yeah, I would get volume. Plus, I also think it's easier to find a running back as opposed to an offensive lineman.
In today's world, might be.
I think when you look at the percentages that way, you go for the volume in that situation as opposed to the earlier pick where maybe you get the stud of a player.
And that's to Paul's argument for moving down, which I think does make some sense. 201-939-4513.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
We sacrificed plenty of time on this program,
right,
I see.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Charlotte likes nothing more than when I play the open when Lance is on because it gets him so angry.
I'm perfectly fine. I just, listen, John,
hey, Lance,
John just
Lance
likes to sacrifice
time.
When
that I have to talk, so you should be happy that you play that.
Well, listen,
right? That's
a good point.
I'd be happier if there was even less time for you to talk. How about that?
Hey, look, the epitome. The coup de grace, and for the common folks, the meat and potatoes of the off-season is free agency. This is where we live. This is where we get a Super Bowl team because you bring in those right players in free agency like we did with O'Hara and McKenzie and those type of dudes and all those cornerbacks that we got, Madison and Walls way back when. All, you know, this is where you make your roster into a Super Bowl team. So, and I don't know about you, I noticed that Mr. Will Beatty was not on that list, but I would love to have a two-time Super
oversight
Bowl
on our part.
Champion
huge oversight.
Left tackle
don't waste
on my team. Right?
And your answer is?
You mean, wait, Charlie, I want to correct you. Don't you mean a two-time inactive Super Bowl champion?
No, he was. In 2011, he played 10 games. He started left tackle. He got injured, but he was an integral part of the 2011 team.
Well, the last
That's
time I checked,
deal.
Charlie, it's 2018, right? 2011 was, what, 7 years ago, right?
2018.
So what happened in 2018, huh? What happened in 2018?
All right,
how many games?
One game.
He played one game.
You guys keep saying he wasn't active
And what game was that, Charlie? The most meaningful game of the season, right?
No, it wasn't.
What game was it? What game was it, Charlie? Come on. Is that
just
the tip of your tongue?
Giants. No. That's where it was.
And how late in the season
point.
Are we talking about?
I just wanted to bring that up. But in free agency,
okay.
I think we have – see, I like free agency because you're going after proven players. The draft is unproven players.
That's true.
They sound good. They probably some of them are going to be great.
Point.
But you don't know. But
well, Charlie, here's the thing.
Agency,
Charlie, here's the thing real quick. Free agency will give you a more immediate impact, but the draft is necessary to build the future of your franchise, and that's how I would put it.
And the depth chart.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not saying don't draft anybody.
No, of course.
What I'm saying is that free agency, at least like that, you know, the guard from Carolina, you
Norwell.
Know this guy is good.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
I'm in agreement.
And that's why you
got
to pay him a lot more money than anyone you draft.
So so let me get this straight. Your wish list this offseason is Will Beatty number one. After you finalize the mega deal with Will Beatty, you move to Norwell at number two, right? So you got two offensive linemen. Who's third on your wish list then in terms of free agency?
If we can get Soldier. $1 billion.
So we're paying three offensive linemen. But Will Beatty's going to be a steal. So that at least gives you some room to maneuver.
So
Norwell, Solder, and Beatty. There we go. Okay.
So I would go after – see, I mean, to me, I would rather go after a tackle in free agency than a guard because in the draft, I don't know if you have really great tackles, left tackles that are going to come right in and start playing.
Charlie, I agree with that. I think that's a good point. I think tackles in the draft take a longer time to develop than guards in the draft.
Right.
I think that's actually a very solid point.
Yeah, you could get an established tackle, and then you could draft a guy like Hernandez, for example.
Yeah, exactly, or Nelson if you want to do that.
Yeah.
And like I said before, I think we could actually move down twice in the draft because I think the Browns are going to take our number two because they're going to want their quarterback and they're going to want Barkley. Then we move down to four. And then from four, we could actually move down to eight or nine or whatever. We can get a really bunch of picks that we can really fill some holes in this roster. I mean, that's what I would do. But we'll see how it all plays out. But free agency is really important. Let's see. I mean, you know, I think we do need another cornerback. So maybe that dude from the Rams that you were talking about.
Tremaine
Johnson. Troy, I think it's going to be very hard to sign more than one really big money free agent.
Right.
I think the cap is going to make that very
hard. Unless they cut some people
Which
before then.
That's true. That's not impossible. But even so, remember, those contracts, it's not like you sign a guy to a big money contract and the money only counts to this year. You know, it's going to count next year when you're trying to sign Landon Collins and you're trying to sign Odell Beckham Jr. So there is future planning involved here as well.
Yeah, you know, I agree. Hey, just remember, Will Beattie's got a ring. Will Beattie's got a
ring.
Hey,
Charlie, hold on a
second.
Why isn't Anthony Dabble on your free agent list?
Oh, I saw him. He was with that's a possibility of bringing him back just for the 90-man roster.
Okay.
Just for the 90-man roster.
Thank you, Charlie.
So
Appreciate the call, buddy.
So Dabble doesn't even have to make the 53. He just wants it back for the sake of filling out the 90-man roster.
Because he wants to be able to call to talk about Pepe Le Pew in June. Thank you, Charlie.
Charlie's just pulling for every former Giant imaginable to re-sign with the team.
Paul in Rhode Island. Yeah, he does like former Giants.
What's going on,
Paul? How are you?
How's it going?
Great, Paul. What's up?
Paul.
All right, I got a quick question, and I'll take your response off air.
Sure.
It might be a little far-fetched, but since we were just talking about Odell's contract next year, the way he was freaking out on Twitter when there was a possibility and a rumor of Jarvis Landry getting traded, what do you think the odds are of maybe him and Jarvis talking and maybe not demanding as much money so they can play together? And I'll take your response off air. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, Paul.
And my answer would be 0.0.
I think Landry wants to get paid.
And I think Odell wants to
get
paid.
Just completed his rookie contract. Beckham's going to complete his rookie contract. And I think that even though they would love to probably be reunited in an ideal world, they also understand the business.
And I think that's something that you can talk about when the guys are going into their third contract.
Yeah.
When they haven't – but remember, neither one of those guys have gotten their big payday yet.
More of a reason why you're not sacrificing now.
And both guys have earned that big payday. So I don't think that that's a team-up situation. Even if you look at what the Heat did with LeBron James, you know, that was those guys after they've already made a lot of money, that they went there and they took a little bit of a hit. So I don't – I understand where you're coming from, Paul. I get it. Don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think the two of them are still so young in their careers that – I think the outlook right now is to make sure that they stay healthy, solidify themselves security-wise for contracts, and then later on in their careers when you feel as if you're settled, you made your money, then maybe you're thinking about rings, you're thinking more about playing with your friends. I think that's a later in the career type of priority.
Final call of the show is Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good morning.
Good morning or good afternoon. How you doing, guys?
Doing well. All right, thank you.
Hey, let me just say one thing here. With all due respect to Charlie and John, by the way, my summer trip to Maine is still in the formative stages. But if I get over the border from New Hampshire to Maine or Massachusetts to Maine, I got to meet up with Charlie somehow.
Len, we'll make it happen.
Listen, Len, if vacations don't mean much of anything to you, more power to you, Len, all right? You know? I mean, I get away.
Well, I got an option of flying through Portland, so I'm thinking, maybe I can, maybe for an
hour.
That's your idea of a vacation.
Maybe in an hour in the airport bar. Yeah.
Remember, Len is a professor. He likes to study interesting specimens and people and learn about them and see what it's all about. So I think it'll be a very good investigation for him, meeting a different type of person and maybe learning something about the unique people that are across the United States of America.
Hey, listen, in all due respect to Charlie, and he's a great caller.
No, we love Charlie. He's the best.
Some of us do, but anyway, yes.
Will Beattie can't play anymore.
No, we know that. We know.
I don't know. I mean, personally, I think the jury's still out.
Only in America can you get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to be an insurance policy for 2 years.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's scary. And that's with all due respect to Will Beattie here, because he put in his time with us, worked hard, and was a good player for a couple of years.
Sure he was. Absolutely.
He can't play anymore.
No.
All right, hey, free agency, and I'm glad you have somewhat transitioned to that topic. As best I can tell from my exhaustive research, the Giants have 20 unrestricted free agents. And that includes Pew, Richburg, Kennard, Fluker,
Cockrell.
Yep.
Once you get past those five, I don't think we're going to have much competition from anybody re-signing the other 15 if we want them. But those are probably the five at the top. We've got two restricted free agents in Jones, who we will make a move for, obviously, and Skinner, the linebacker. His time may be over with the Giants. I don't know if we'll make a move. Now, there may be a few exclusive rights. I haven't gone that far yet. You know, those are the guy you make them an offer and they belong to. There's no competition.
Yep.
I think maybe a guy like Jalapio is on that list. So 20 unrestricted free agents and Jones are really the guys we're, you know, looking at to possibly bring back. But the top five are the guys that I to me are the guys that I mentioned. Those are the guys we might have a little competition from other teams. By my way of thinking, we've and this goes without saying. Really, everybody's going to say big deal, and boy, you've really unveiled something here. We've got to address the linebacker problem. Of the guys you mentioned this morning, Brabham probably is the best of the group, but man, he's going to cost a lot of money. We're going to have to overpay if we want Brabham. I mean, if we just mention that we're interested in talking to Brabham, the Eagles are going to up the ante. You know, Lance, it's like I always say, you can't let your players go to somebody else in the division. You got to protect your assets. They're not going to let Brabham go to us. But
well,
Brabham would be nice.
I mean, keep this in mind, Len. 21 of Philadelphia's 22 starters are under contract. So,
wow.
You know, they have the flexibility. I don't know what their cap space is like, but they have the flexibility that if all they need to do is retain one or two key guys, I think they're going to have the flexibility to do that. You just have to keep that in mind because their core is pretty much in place since it's such a young nucleus.
Yeah, yeah, good point. You know, we can dream about Brabham, and he'd be a terrific player. Great speed, and God knows we need speed at linebacker. If you could get Brabham, Goodson, and re-sign Kennard, and I think that's a must. You got three pretty good starting linebackers. After that, you probably have to rely on a draft pick, maybe another free agent, and Munson, who's a pretty good player, but I don't think he's suited for the starting role. Hey, let me ask you a question about the offensive line.
Sure.
And, you know, back to Pugh and Richburg again. Would you consider, given whatever the medicals point out, and we know there was some concern at the end of the year with the back, with Pugh, and, you know, if we judge that the guy really wants to be here, should we consider transitioning Pugh?
Well, I mean,
you
could if you wanted to. I mean, I guess that would give you the ability to match any offer that's made to him. You wouldn't get any compensation.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can, but I'm not – I don't think whether you have the tag on him or not is really that big of a deal. I think if you really want to keep Justin Pugh, you go out there and you make an offer to Justin Pugh. I don't think the transition tag is something that's necessary. You know what I mean?
Well, but
okay.
The transition tag –
Here's what my thinking was. I mean, we really don't know. I mean, the guy has been hurt every year, okay? But on the other hand, he's probably – our best offensive lineman at four positions.
Yes.
All right? And we can plug him in at any one of those four if he stays healthy. So what I'm thinking about here is sharing the risk in the transition. We get the one more year, whatever the price is on a transition tag for, you know, a lineman, a guard, let's say. It's probably going to be about $7, $8 million. We take a look at what we got for the one year. Maybe we get a player who gives us 12, 14, 15 games, and he'll be good if he plays. So that's what I was thinking with regard to the transition tag.
Well, the way that I look at the transition tag, Len, to your point, is if the Giants are interested in bringing back Justin Pugh, but they don't necessarily want to set the market, what they would do is, with the transition tag, is you're telling Justin, go out, see what you can get. We'll then evaluate the offers, and we'll determine whether or not we want to match that. So you're now putting the pressure on Pugh and his reps to set the market as opposed to you flat out giving him a deal, and you don't know what the rest of the market looks like.
I think that would have happened anyway, whether the tag's
on or not.
It's possible. I just think it gives you some options.
Just from my side of the discussion here.
Yeah.
If we believe that Pugh is medically okay, and Lance, we let him do that, he's not coming back.
No, but if you have the transition
Because he's going to get an offer, Lance, he's going to get an offer that we are not going to match.
Well, I mean, listen, that's based on your opinion, and you think that the market is going to be big for him. But what I'm saying is that when you have the transition tag on him, he doesn't just walk on his own terms. The Giants have the right for first refusal is what I'm getting at.
That's true.
So even if the offer is ridiculous, to your point, Len, the Giants still have the last opportunity to look at the deal and say, Justin, we want you back, or Justin, best of luck. And that's at least a security blanket is my point.
Okay, I follow. So, I follow. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
We got to run, Len.
I wouldn't put that transition tag on the – you know, I wouldn't forget about that, though. I still think, you know, by my way of thinking, I still think that that may be a possibility with Pugh if we want to see what we've got from a health standpoint.
All right, Len. Appreciate
the
call, my friend.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate
it. Hey, always good to hear from you. A couple tweets real fast. Ben Gruen, Lance, how do you think our year would have gone if they drafted Kamara instead of Ingram and had Ellison as the full-time tight end?
I don't think that would have been guaranteed to necessarily lock up a playoff spot.
No, but I think it probably – look, it's very easy to go back in time and pick out the one guy that dropped and say, oh, we should have picked that guy. I think it's a very easy thing to do.
But my point is, Kamara, why did he have success, John? He had success because the Saints also did not have offensive line issues. The Saints also had Mark Ingram, who was a nice productive player to bounce him off of.
Who actually had more carries than Kamara.
Yeah, the problem with that view is you can't simply say if you take a player and you put him on the Giants, he's going to have the same exact success. The elements around that player are just as important to look at as to why the player had success, not just that talent alone on an island.
At Freddie J underscore 23, I know everyone is talking about quarterbacks and Barkley at number two, but you can't rule out Bradley Chubb, especially the way Gettleman covets defensive ends. I agree.
Yep.
Can never rule out the pass rusher. And then Patricio Agatiello. Hope I got that one right. What do you think about going after Todd Davis and pairing him with B.J. Goodson, given that he played in a 3-4 defense in Denver? Patricio, I got to be honest, I'm not that familiar with Todd Davis. I'd have to do some research on him, and we'll take a look, and we'll give you an answer on that.
But, you know, regardless of that, I still go back to whether a player was in a 3-4 or not should not be the main indicator of whether or not you want to bring them in because of what James Betcher's done in the past. I think it's more of, does he have the characteristics that if James Betcher brought him in, could he do what James Betcher needs him to accomplish? That's how I think you need to look at it, more so than whether or not a player came from a 3-4. For example, Keenan Robinson played in both the 3-4 and the 4-3, and the Giants tried to fit him into where they think he would flourish. So I think you're looking for a more versatile player, not necessarily a player that comes from that scheme.
And Ben Gruen, one more. Hernandez will not be there in round two. He might go top 20. Here's the thing, guys. There's a lot of good interior offensive linemen. If it's not Julio Hernandez, it could be Isaiah Wynn. It could be Billy Price out of Ohio State. It can be the guard out of Iowa that's also very good. There are a lot of interior offensive linemen. And if five guards go in the first round, I'd be blown away. That just doesn't happen normally. So I would imagine one of those guys will probably be there with the Giants' first, second-round pick.
Unless it's somebody that teams project can play both guard and tackle.
Right.
That's what changes it up, and we got to see the combine and a few other factors before we can determine things like that.
Ben wanted to trade the Giants' first-round pick for the Bills, two consecutive ones in the first round.
That's 21 and 22.
I think that's too far of a drop-down for me. I would not want to drop down that far, in my opinion. Everybody, thanks for joining us for Lance Metal. I'm John Schmelk. Fiegels and I tomorrow on Giants.com. Everyone, have a great day.
Have a good one.